Good morning. My name is Felicia, and I'll be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the NBPE Investor Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. John Boozer. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you, Felicia, and thanks everybody for joining us on today's NBPE Private Investor Call. I'm joined today by my partners Peter Von Lehe and Paul Daggett, and we'll walk through the presentation, which you could find at www.nbprivateequitypartners.com. You'll also find there later an audio recording of this and all our prior presentations and audio recordings as well from past presentations. So we'll flip on to the deck to page one. NBPE, as you know, is a closed-end investment company. We provide investors with a diversified exposure to the private equity class. This provides to our investors an exposure in the private asset class to both capital appreciation and to current income. We achieve this through investments in private equity-backed companies, and we benefit from the attractiveness of the private markets. We believe as the manager of the firm, that our information and sourcing advantages provide great deal flow and great opportunities for our investments. Flipping on to page two, a little bit of information about the returns that we have achieved and also our capital structure. As you can see, our capital appreciation based on NAV per share cumulative total return has been strong over the short, medium, and long term. The numbers you see on the page are the cumulative total return over the period represented there. So our one-year return is 15.6%, the cumulative three-year return 36.7%, and the cumulative five-year return 67.1%. Our since inception return from July 18th of 2007, when the company was started, is 46.7%. We also have set a goal, those of you who have followed us, to create a level of income in the company so we can have a dividend payment that is fully covered. And as you've seen, we steadily built our income-yielding portfolio over the last several years. Currently, we have a dividend yield of 3.9% on the stock price and 3.3% on the NAV based on the dividends we've been paying over the past quarter or past semiannual periods. Currently, the dividend is 124% covered on a run rate basis, meaning that the income off our current investments would be sufficient to pay the prior dividend 124% of the time, or all the time by a factor of 24% extra coverage. We have a very strong balance sheet. The total assets are 857.3 as of the 31st of October, and the net asset value of NBPE as an entity is $674 million. The primary differences in those two numbers is our use of credit facility and our accrued amount of our ZDPs. We have a commitment coverage ratio of 125% of our unfunded liabilities. If you go on to page three, it shows our strategy in creating an entity that has a strong equity and income-based component. Looking at on the right side, you see a pie chart. As we sit today as a percentage of our private equity fair value, you see at the bottom of the pie chart our legacy fund investments are 31% of the portfolio. On the right upper side of the pie chart, our income investments are 38% and our equity investments are 31%. If you look at our focus over on the left, you see we divided into three categories. If you start from the bottom, we started the business with mostly legacy fund investments, but as we moved to a portfolio created of direct investments, you see now we have 69% of the portfolio in direct investment. We have not made a new legacy fund investment since 2010. That portfolio is in realization mode, and we'll cover the performance of that later in the presentation. This move from fund investments to direct investments does a number of beneficial things for NBPE. We've avoided a layer of fees at the underlying funds. We eliminate blind pool risk when you invest in managers at the outset of their funds, and we avoid excess unfunded liabilities in our capital structure. With those three benefits, we've been able to add income investments and equity investments, as you see. The income investments are junior debt of private equity-backed companies and healthcare credits. We focus on companies with strong free cash flow, which allows those companies to quickly deleverage. On the equity side, we invest primarily alongside leading private equity firms and equity investments, and we always seek investments with a clear exit path. This also increases the velocity of capital turning over within our portfolio, which we also believe reduces risk. If you flip on to page four, a little bit about us at Neuberger Berman as the manager of the fund. We think Neuberger Berman is a great platform for creating this sort of private equity portfolio for NBPE. We have information advantages that come with being a private equity investor for over 27 years. We have an integrated platform across fund and direct investments. And as you see, we have $25 billion of assets under management or committed capital that invest across different strategies, including private investment portfolios, equity co-investment, secondary investments, private debt, and other strategies, all within private equity. As a result, we're a key player in the industry and are able to access deal flow from that position within the industry. The deal flow comes in part from being an investor in over 300 active funds, and we've conducted diligence on over 2,500 funds. Some of our deal flows comes from funds we're not invested in, but we've created a relationship with. As a significant player in the industry, we consistently invest over $1 billion of capital into private equity funds and direct investments annually. Also, our team is very experienced. We have 200 total people. 70 of those are investment professionals and 130 administrative and finance professionals. In order to do private equity around the globe, we have investment offices in the U.S. as well as London, Hong Kong, and Colombia. So with that, I'll turn it over to Peter to cover part of our strategy.
Thanks, John. As John mentioned, our new investment activity and a substantial majority of our portfolio is in direct investments of both equity and income. We believe that both of these areas continue to provide us with interesting opportunities even in today's market. What I'm going to do is dig in a little bit deeper on both of these strategies so you can understand it in more detail. So our equity investment strategy is focused on direct equity co-investments alongside leading private equity firms in their core areas of expertise. Focus on high-quality businesses that we can acquire at reasonable valuations, and doing that with managers where we believe that the company is particularly well-suited to the manager's skill set. We're biased towards investments with a shorter expected time to value creation and to liquidity. And typically, we do this without paying any economics to the lead private equity firm. And our manager is highly experienced in these transactions, having done 130 direct equity co-investments since 2006. So one of the questions we're often asked about is the valuation levels in the private equity markets, and you can see some data on that on page six. Valuations have definitely risen in the private equity markets. As you can see on the data on page six, however, the transactions that private equity firms are doing in today's market, but also historically, are really at a discount to those available in the public markets at any given point in time. So the bar on the left shows the valuations that the private equity firms are paying in U.S. transactions. The bar on the right shows the Russell 2000. So say what you can see there is a significant discount period after period of what private equity is paying relative to the public markets. And even if you took this data set back 20 years, it would still continue to show that situation of there being a discount to what private equity firms are paying versus what you can acquire equity assets for in public markets. Now, this is for the U.S. What's interesting is Europe actually is a different story, where particularly in more recent years, European private equity firms have typically been buying companies at multiples similar to those available in European public equity markets. So now let's look at our income strategy. The core of our strategy is to capture the illiquidity premium by investing in the junior debt of private equity-backed companies. Now, this is a similar target set as for our equity co-investments, but with a focus, of course, on capital preservation because we're making income investments. What we're looking to do is invest in established and stable private equity-backed businesses. Typically, they're second lien or mezzanine portions of the capital structure. And we're looking for a high-quality private equity sponsorship with a private equity firm that has a historically low loss ratios and a pattern of treating creditors fairly. Now, once again, we benefit from our manager's expertise in this area, and our manager has completed more than 30 corporate private debt transactions since 2007. So similar to what we did for the equity side, let's look at some of the market data to see what this opportunity set is. And you can see that on page 8. So we're focused on providing income while benefiting from an illiquidity premium. So you can see from the chart on the left here where that illiquidity premium actually is in the current market. So as mentioned, we're focused on second lien and mezzanine of private equity-backed companies. We think that's roughly comparable in risk to what one can achieve in a more liquid form through high-yield bonds. We can see, though, as well, the high-yield market today is paying a yield of 5.8%. So the second lien market on average is 9.8%, and private equity backed mezz is an 11 to 13%. So we think a substantial illiquidity premium by our ability to source these more difficult to understand transactions, and particularly our ability to hold illiquid securities. Now, one of the questions that we often get is, aren't private equity backed credits risky, and isn't it better to focus on non-sponsored backed credits? Well, actually, if you look at the historical default rate data, and you can see that on the right side of page 8, and this is for all levered loans, not just for junior debt, but what you can see there is that in relatively benign credit environments, you have roughly similar default rates between sponsor-backed and non-sponsor-backed credits. However, in situations of market stress, what you find is that you have significantly higher default rates of non-sponsor-backed transactions, about double the default rate. Now, a lot of times people initially will say, well, why is that? Well, we think there's a multiple reasons for that, but it includes things such as the fact that private equity firms are controlling the businesses, have the ability to take corrective action if things start to go off track. Also, they have the ability to put additional equity into the companies as well. So real advantage of there being a control investor who is in a position to lose money before we do. Another area that we find particularly attractive, and it's not a large portion of our portfolio, it's about $50 million, but we think it's in our portfolio, but we think it's an area that we can earn particular outsized returns, is in healthcare credit. And that strategy is shown a bit on page 9. There, what we're focused on doing is investing in the debt of middle market commercial stage healthcare companies. Typically, these are more growth-oriented transactions. We focus on downside protection, but also with an upside participation. And our manager has invested in 30 such transactions since 2009. So, in these strategies of investing across private markets, we're really benefiting from the illiquidity premium and also the sourcing and information advantages of our manager. Now, all of this is interesting, but it only really matters if it's able to generate return for you, our shareholders. And the performance that John mentioned earlier is shown on page 10. We're very proud of the fact that whether we're focused on year-to-date, 1 year, 3 year, 5 year since inception, NBPE has performed well on a NAV basis. Well, on an absolute basis, we think, but particularly on a relative basis to any of the potential peer groups that one might consider us against. Also, though, not only is we perform well on a NAV basis, but we've also performed well on a share price basis, particularly over the last 5 years, 3 year, 1 year, and even year to date. Now, when we look at our overall performance, though, one of the things that we, frankly, are most proud of is our since inception performance, because we actually IPO'd in July of 2007. So it gives us the opportunity to look across the entire market cycle, how have we performed. And we're proud to say that since July of 2007, our NAV is up 46.7% since that time period. As I say, that makes this shows that we perform particularly well against whether it's the listed private equity direct vehicles, fund to funds, or income funds. Despite the persisting discount, which I'll touch on in a bit, our share price total return has also been strong, as John mentioned, with a 26.7% share price total return year to date. Now, one of the reasons why we think that that return has been as strong as it has on the share price total return is the fact that we pay a covered dividend. And the information on the dividend is shown on page 11. Our annualized dividend yield is 3.9% on share price or 3.3% on NAV. And as John mentioned, that dividend is 124% covered by the contractual cash yield from our yielding portfolio. Now, Let's touch on that that subject of discount, which I mentioned earlier, and you can see data on relative discounts on page 12. What you can see there is that our discount today is right around 17%. It was 17.5% at the end of October, 16.9% today. And as mentioned, the portfolio of NBPE today consists of the direct equity investments, the income investments, and the legacy fund investments. And so if you compare us to what we think are the relevant peer groups for each of those three areas, what you'll find is that the weighted average discount across those three peer groups is 9.7%. We're trading at a wider discount of around 17%. And as we say, that's despite the fact that our NAV performance has been stronger than those groups over short, medium, and long term. Now, we view this as an opportunity for shareholders, and what we're going to focus on is continuing to do a good job as best of our ability to generate strong returns from our direct equity portfolio, from our credit portfolio, and have a successful runoff of the legacy fund portfolio, as well as continue to provide investors with the transparency for them to make an informed decision about the appropriate value for our shares. So with that, I'd like to hand it over to Paul Daggett, who will give you an update on the most recent quarter. Paul?
Thank you, Peter. So turning to page 13, we have the NBPE NAV update, and you'll have seen this table in past presentations. Importantly, at the bottom line, you'll see that the total return NAV increased 11.3% so far during this year. So it's been a very strong performance during the year, 11.3% including the dividend, approximately 8% even after the dividends have been paid. And to look at the drivers of that, if you look at the total private equity fair value line, you'll see that the fair value increased so far during the year by $192 million. That's a 30% increase from where we stood at 31st of December 2013. And the reason for that is that we've continued to make investments in the direct portfolio. Income and equity investments in total have increased by approximately two-thirds from the same point during the year, and that's been funded partly by the legacy fund investments decreasing as they continue to cash flow and produce returns to us. So that legacy fund line has decreased by 13%. We've also used our balance sheet more efficiently during the year. You'll see that at the year end of last year, we had $64 million in cash. Today, we have $25 million in cash. But we've utilized our credit facility to the tune of $90 million. So we've invested $130 million of that available capital into the private equity fair value line. So we believe that the performance has been extremely strong during the year, and we also are pleased to say that we think we're using our balance sheet more efficiently at this point and have invested that into good investments during the year. 14 looks at the portfolio in a little bit more detail. John covered the portfolio investment type in the top left. One thing I will add is that if you look at this pie chart compared to where we stood only at 9:30, September 30th of last year, legacy fund investments were at 51% at that point in time. So 13 months later, that is down to 31% as the cash flows continue to come back and that fund portfolio has produced good returns, enabling us to invest into the direct investments that, as we've mentioned, are our core strategy today. In terms of geography on the top right, we do continue to believe that North America is the most attractive place to make private equity investments, both on a macro thesis in terms of the growth that we've seen in the portfolio and in the economy, but also in terms of the underlying opportunities that we're seeing as we look at them on a case-by-case basis. So that's something we've believed for a long time, and continue to believe as we make new investments in the portfolio. In terms of year investment on the bottom right, again, just to illustrate the shift that we have in our portfolio as we underwrite good investments and hopefully investments that have a shorter time to liquidity, you'll see that 2008 and earlier is 22%. Again, looking back to where we stood at September 30th of 2013, that was at 40%. So that portfolio has decreased. And really what you can see on this chart is that 2013 and 2014 have been years of robust investment activity. We've seen good opportunities, and we've redeployed that capital from those earlier vintages into more recent vintage years. as those years have gone on. And then on the industry line, again, this is a chart that we show on a regular basis. Consumer retail, energy, financial services, healthcare, industrials, and technology all make up meaningful parts of the portfolio, but it does overall illustrate that we're very well diversified. If you look at the equity portfolio, we have been this year focused really on industrials, healthcare, technology, and energy. And then on the debt side of the portfolio, healthcare, industrials, and technology, again, have been persistent themes that we've been making investments in during this year. These are all areas that we think are growing very, very well within the U.S. economy. And equally, as I mentioned, we're seeing good micro opportunities as we look at investments on a case-by-case basis. Moving on to page 15 and the capital position, we show here the cash balance at $25 million, available credit facility of $110 million. That means there's $90 million drawn on the credit facility at this point in time. Our total capital resources, which is the credit facility plus cash balance, stands at $135 million. And if you compare that to the unfunded commitments, adjusted for funds past their investment periods, for the fund of funds commitments, which are older commitments in there, which we again don't expect to be called, and to one credit investment, which we've adjusted for the unfunded because there are daily paybacks on it, then the adjusted unfunded commitments are $108 million. That reflects the capital that we expect to be called by commitments we have in place. You can see that we have 125% adjusted commitment coverage ratio. So again, we feel that we're in a very strong position. I would also point out at the bottom of the page that of the $108 million in those adjusted unfunded commitments, the vast majority is to programs that are controlled by the manager. So $70 million to the co-investment program, $16 million to the healthcare credit program, and only $21 million to third-party managers. So again, we feel that we're in a very strong position in the balance sheet and are very easily able to cover the commitments we have in place. Page 16 looks at our quarterly cash flows over the past year in terms of contributions and distributions to new investments. You can see that it has been, again, another very active investment year, as well as an active year for distributions. Just to start off with the legacy fund investments, you'll see very small capital contributions by quarter to new funds or to funds from capital calls from those older investments. You will see, though, very nice distributions. So in total, $107 million of distributions from funds over the last 13 months. The vast majority of that is coming from special situations funds, as well as fund of funds, and then some legacy buyout funds from the very old vintages. So they're producing very nice cash flows. When you look at the co-investment portfolio, again, we've seen some good exit activity early in the year with two sales in Q4 of 2013, one sale, one IPO in Q1 of 2014, and then some distribution activity so far in Q2 and Q3. We have also continued to make active investments in the space. So looking at what we've done over the year, we made two new investments in Q4 of 2013, four new investments in Q1, six new investments in Q2 of 2014, and six new investments in the 4 months to the end of October. So again, it's been a very active program, continuing to put new investments into place. And then most notably, the bar at the very top, you'll see, is the private debt and healthcare credit investments, where we've been particularly active. We've also seen some nice distributions from exits, but we made five new investments in Q4 of 2013, totaling $50 million, two new investments on the private debt side, six on the healthcare credit side in Q1 of 2014, seven new investments on the private debt side, six on the healthcare credit side in Q2 of 2014, and then seven new private debt investments, one new healthcare credit investment in Q3 and October of 2014. So very active part of the portfolio where we've seen some really good opportunities and deployed capital into those. Just to look at the realization events in the equity investments and legacy fund investments in more detail on page 17, you'll see there's been $95 million of distributions in total. That comes from sales, recapitalizations, IPOs where there are some sales, and then some subsequent sell downs of those public positions post-IPO. They've all contributed to that $95 million that's been returned to us during the year so far. Importantly, you'll see the average uplift, which is the markup that you see on an exit event from where it was held in private rounds previously, has been 24%. So that gives us confidence that the marks in the portfolio have been very reasonable, and that as we've seen exits, we've seen a nice markup to those, which has contributed to that strong performance I mentioned earlier during the year. Just to mention two of our more recent exit events, which are both during Q3 of 2014. Capsugel is a recapitalization that was completed in August of 2014. This is a KKR-led buyout in what was a spin-out from Pfizer. This is a company that manufactures and sells pharmaceutical capsules and drug delivery systems. It's a very strong cash flowing company, which means it delevers very, and as it delevers, KKR on two occasions, most recently, as I mentioned in August, has recapitalized it to bring the leverage back to where it was at the time of the buyout, and with that have paid dividends to the investors, which include us as a co-investor. So that produced $1.8 million in August of 2014. GTT is an older investment, actually, which is one of those pre-2008 investments. This is an investment we made in a company that is actually based in Paris that designs systems using the transportation of LNG. This was an investment that was made with no leverage, actually, performed, had a decrease in revenues during the downturn, but because it had no leverage, continued to function very well. That has now come back very strongly, completed an initial public offering in February, and in September, the lead sponsor sold down a portion of its public stock and returned that cash to us. So, again, what this slide shows you is that the more recent investments, as well as some of the older investments, are continuing to produce cash flow to us. So we feel very good about that. On page 18, we turn to the new equity investments, which are all co-investments. Again, we've made 16 new equity investments year to date. More recently, in July to October, we funded $35 million to that. And as I mentioned earlier, that's really across industrials, technology, consumer products, healthcare. They've been the focus areas for us so far this year. Two examples which are kind of at the opposite ends of the spectrum of things we look at, Warranty Group and Counsel. The Warranty Group is an investment alongside TPG. This is a company that provides extended warranty products for auto and consumer sectors. And so an insurance company that has very high frequency, low severity claims, which means it has very predictable cash flows. Because of the way cash flow accounting works in this particular industry, it gives you also very good forward visibility into the earnings of the company. We felt that TPG is a very strong sponsor in this space, and for the business thesis of operational improvements and portfolio optimization, that this is an investment in very good hands, and was an investment we completed in July of 2014 in the large cap buyout space. As I mentioned, the other investment we've highlighted here is really at the opposite end of the spectrum in the growth capital space, really in the smaller mid-cap growth capital space. This is a company that's really a technology company operating in the genetic testing space. It uses software and robotics to re-engineer genetic testing, and its first product is a carrier screening product that combines 100 different tests into one using their proprietary software and robotics. It's a company that's growing very quickly, that we made alongside a fund called Rosemont Seneca, based in the U.S. On the West Coast. So it gives you, again, I think, a little flavor that we're really looking at all different types of investments, from those very large caps investments through to smaller growth capital investments. We've, I think, produced a very interesting portfolio of co-investments, and you can see that in more detail on page 19, which just gives you a summary of the overall equity co-investment portfolio. There's 56 different companies alongside 35 different sponsors, with a total of $258 million of fair value. The portfolio has performed well year to date, increasing 26% so far, This is primarily a buyout portfolio, and it is very well diversified across industry, vintage, and sponsor. On the right-hand side of the page, we have the 10 largest investments, which total $115 million, so 45% of the total portfolio in these 10 investments. And, you know, these are the largest 10, so we didn't pick them, but they do, I think, again, show how we diversify our portfolio and also the strength of the portfolio. So looking down this page, again, we have really a diversification across sponsor types from large cap buyout sponsors like KKR, TPG, and Carlyle, down to mid cap buyout sponsors like Thoma Bravo, JLL, Veritas, all leaders in their respective spaces. There's different types of transactions included here. Three of them are midlife transactions, which are transactions where we go in during an investment by an underlying sponsor, usually to help them fund an additional buyout to add on to that portfolio company. There's three of those in that. Typically, they have shorter times to exit, which we mentioned is a focus of ours. There's two public to private transactions, three carve-outs from corporate owners, one secondary buyout, and one corporate partnering transaction. And then again, across vintage years, there's one 2007 investment, one 2010, two 2011, one 2012, three 2013, and two 2014. So really, I'm trying to illustrate there's a very good diversification across types, and these 10 investments really, I think, prove that. In terms of valuation multiples for the portfolio, it's a 10.1 times LTM EBITDA multiple and a leverage multiple of 5 times. Again, that's supported by when we go into investments, we always look at the nature of recurring revenues, how sticky customers tend to be through a cycle, and we feel that 5 times LTM EBITDA is very sustainable for this portfolio. And then importantly, looking at the portfolio as a whole, we have revenue growth of 8.5% in these companies, LTM, and then EBITDA growth of 12%. So a very strongly growing portfolio, both in terms of revenue and even more so in terms of underlying earnings. So again, this portfolio is performing very well. One thing I didn't mention on the right is that nearly, in fact, all of these companies are performing either ahead or on budget, even the more recent investments. So again, we feel good about these 10 investments, but also the overall equity portfolio. With that, I'll turn it back to John to cover the income investments.
Great. Thanks, Paul. So the next few pages cover the income investments, starting on page 20. What you'll see is we've received interest payments this year of $18.8 million. And recall that we started off a base portfolio, as Paul illustrated earlier, of $185 million of income-generating investments at the start of the year. So 18.8, a good return on that. The realization events in that portfolio have totaled $54.9 million. So $54.9 million, again, shows the high velocity of capital we have off the starting base of $185. In addition, as Paul covered in the equity portfolio, where there's substantial uplift in our realized valuations, our debt realizations have also provided us an uplift over what we were carrying them in the prior quarter, in this case of 10%. And that's a product of both the certain amounts we would have accrued to maturity being pushed forward, but also, in some cases, equity that we held alongside the debt positions that we had. A representative realization event during this year is from our healthcare portfolio. This is a specialty drug pharmaceutical company that we realized in October and received back $2.7 million in proceeds from the exit. This company developed specialty injectable and ophthalmic drugs. We thought, in particular, because of the complex generics that this company dealt with, there are high barriers to entry relative to other parts of the market where the drugs are not quite so complex to replicate in the generic market. Page 21 talks about several new income investments that we've made recently. Year to date, though, $159.2 million have been funded to 21 new income investments. And during the July through October period, we funded $47.7 million to new income investments. This represents 13 in private companies in their corporate private debt investments and 8 in our healthcare program. A couple of representative investments during the third quarter. One is K&N. K&N is the industry leader in automotive performance air filters with a very high percentage of the marketplace. They provide a compelling value because of the high quality of their air filter to their channel partners and to consumers. You can see there the security is a second lien. It has an L plus 8.625% return with a 1% floor, and we purchased that at a 2.25% OID. The second company is Trinity Consultants. It's a provider of environmental consulting services, and particularly with firms that have regulatory restrictions in the air quality and their impact on the air quality. Trinity Consultants helps advise them on that and regulate that. This security is partially a PIC note. There's 10% cash interest that's always payable, and there's 3% that can toggle off that can be paid as PIC interest or paid currently as cash. This particular company we liked very much because of the high recurring revenue characteristics, because of its position in industry that's highly regulated. Both of these companies were alongside sponsors who we had a strong platform relationship with LP Investments and looking at prior deals with them on a direct basis. Now moving on to 22 is a summary of where our corporate private debt and healthcare credits are today. It includes a total of 40 investments representing $318 million of fair value at this point. Again, that's up from 185 at the start of the year. You can see the top 10 investments, again, very diversified across different industries. And you'll see the estimated cash yield to maturity, an estimated total yield, and you see those range from as low as 9.1% to up to 13% on the cash yield to maturity. Most of these notes, as you'll see in the variable rate column, are variable rate notes, and you see the percentage of NBPE NAV that are represented by each of these credit positions. On the left, you see a number of statistics, including our overall portfolio, a 9.8% cash yield to maturity and a 10.5% total yield to maturity on our portfolio. 75% are in floating rate debt with floors of 1% or 1.25%. And across that portfolio, the weighted average total debt is 5.5 times EBITDA. And the senior debt that sets ahead of us is 3.7x. So on average, we're in a tranche that goes from the 3.7 level to the 5.5 to 1.8x area where our investments have been made. You know, as our strategy continues to create substantial current income with contractual cash returns and often upside from equity investments. On the healthcare credits, there continue being royalty-backed notes, senior secured loans, second lien debt, preferred stock, and warrants as we structure those credits to our best advantage. Page 23 is a summary of our legacy fund investments. As Paul described, as it's decreased substantially over the past year, its percentage of our total portfolio. The value today, $255 million, approximately invested in 39 fund investments. That's down from about 292 at the start of the year. And as Paul illustrated, there's very few capital calls being made here with only $6 million called against that 292 of starting value during the year. This portfolio continues to appreciate, so it has had a 9.1% year-to-date performance. So continuing to create returns as it's realizing its way down to become a smaller and smaller part of our portfolio. $70 million of cash has come back year-to-date, including 24.5 in the third quarter plus October. Now, one of the things of our platform is we have a very strong secondary capacity in our platform, which gives us continuous deep insight into the secondary market. So as part of our strategy to reduce our fund portfolio, we look for the capacity to have opportunistic strategic sales from that portfolio. We identified two fund interests that we thought would sell well in the marketplace. Took those to market, and those two, Wyzetta Partners II and Summit Partners Europe, we were in the process of closing transactions at 100% of their June 30, 24 reported net asset value before transaction fees. In the aggregate, this will be $11 million of NAV that's reduced from our fund portfolio, so we're pleased that that transaction is going to go forward. With that, I'll turn it over to Peter to cover some matters regarding our share price.
Thanks, John. As previously mentioned, our share price is up by 32.3%, including dividends over the last 12 months, and our NAV per share, including dividends, has gone up by 15.6% in that same time period. In terms of trading volume, you can see that in the middle of page 24. We have a bit over 48 million shares outstanding, and we've had 20.8 million shares traded so far this year, both on exchange and over the counter. Interestingly, the 18.3 million shares were traded on exchange. That is a material increase in the percentage of our shares that are traded on exchange versus off exchange versus prior years, where it was a bit more evenly split, or even a majority of our shares being traded off exchange. That creates the daily average daily trading volume in our shares of 98,000 shares. In summary, you can see on page 25, we believe that NBPE continues to offer a compelling investment opportunity, provides the opportunity for both capital appreciation and growth from our equity investments and our income investments. We also have the covered dividend that we're able to pay because of those income investments, supported by the cash yield from that portion of our portfolio. And we believe there's an opportunity for the discount in our stock to continue to narrow. So with that, I'd like to hand it over to you, our shareholders, for any questions you may have.
If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, that is star, then the number one for any questions. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Again, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star, then the number one. We do have a question from the line of Frank Belevich with IBS.
Yes, good morning. Frank Belevich from IBS Amsterdam, IBS Asset Management. Could you comment somewhat more on your strategy in relation to the leverage? You currently have been borrowing and using the credit facility, and what is your strategy for the, let's say, 2015?
Sure. Well, our overall strategy there is, as John mentioned and Paul as well, as we've continued to move the strategy more towards directs rather than through fund investments, we think that that's a material de-risking of the balance sheet because of the fact that we don't have the large unfunded commitment amounts to third-party funds that one necessarily goes and needs to have a backstop credit facility to be able to support. In addition to that, we've also de-risked the portfolio, of course, by having 38% of the assets in more senior portions of the capital structure and credit as opposed to equity. On the other hand, what that provides us with is the opportunity to actually make our balance sheet more efficient by having some use of our credit facility. What we've indicated in the past is that sort of we think a investment level of 120 to 130% over the longer term is actually very sustainable. Obviously, it could be a bit higher or lower than those levels based upon shorter term activities, but we think investment levels in that range is appropriate and prudent.
Okay, thank you.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one. At this time, there are no further questions.
Great. Well, thank you very much, everyone.
We do have a question from the line of Ann Scholler with Oriole Securities.
Good morning, Peter. It's Ian Scholler here. In terms of the sort of new deals and the sort of pipeline that you're seeing, in terms of the sort of potential returns and yields that you're seeing, I mean, how are these sort of moving at the moment?
Sure. Well, no, thanks for the question. In terms of the opportunity set, maybe just take the yield question first, right? What you're seeing right now is that while the credit markets had gotten much more robust over the last few years, you have seen over the last couple of months a bit more choppiness in those credit markets. So it has not resulted in a material widening of yields, but we have started to see a bit more, as say, choppiness that has stopped the sort of downward progression of yields. And actually, we've seen some deals widen a bit versus what people were originally looking to go out with. And we think that's, frankly, a good thing for for our CRED portfolio there and our income portfolio in terms of being able for new transactions. It's also allowed us to opportunistically pick up investments in the secondary market over time, and we think that that could increase with choppiness given the knowledge that we have on a large number of credits that other people don't know well. If you have more choppiness, that could create opportunity for us, but obviously that will be market dependent. On the equity side, valuations are up, as you could see from the data that we presented, makes it harder to find good investments. However, we are continuing to find good investments, and so it just means that we have to work that much harder to source the right transactions, and we have to be that much more disciplined on the investment side. You can't just buy any deal, but we typically turn down 90% of the co-investments that we look at, and those are deals that the market are generally doing. And so we think that double layer of underwriting that we have, where not only is the private equity firm underwriting the deal, but then we're underwriting and doing a much smaller sample set than what the private equity universe is doing as a whole that we have access to, we think that double layer of underwriting provides us with the opportunity set to do good deals, and that's shown to be the case historically. But it's harder out there, but we're continuing to find interesting transactions.
Okay, thank you, Peter. That's very informative.
And there are no further questions.
Right. Well, thank you very much, everyone. We appreciate your time and attention. Obviously, as you saw today, we've changed the format of our presentation a little bit here and trying to make it a little bit more transparent. But if you have any feedback, positive or negative, we'd love to hear it on that or on anything else. So please contact us anytime. Thank you very much.
Thank you for participating in today's conference call. You may now disconnect.